Hello, Ryan. Did you have fun?
Hello and welcome back to the Comic Lero Podcast, the podcast that does deep dives into the best, worst, and middest of comic books, graphic novels, and sometimes mangas. I'm your host, the soon-to-be-known-as Comic Stan, and with me, as always, is my dystopian co-host, it's Jamie.
I thought you were going to go for excellent co-host.
I'll save that for another X-Men, because there's loads of extravagant...
Extravagant, extraordinary.
Yeah.
Extraordinary.
Extraordinary, is that separate from extraordinary?
I think,
like, if you put space in them?
Yeah, I think that's the root of it, I believe. That's the etymology.
Some people are being called, like, you're so ordinary, you're extraordinary. Is that how it works?
I think so, yeah.
Well, for the listeners, if you're hearing an echo, ignore it, as best we can describe.
Well, so we have a perfectly serviceable space that we've recorded how many episodes in?
61.
And so Ryan marketed this space to me saying it would be less echoey. What we've done is replaced a space with no echo for a space with lots of echo.
Yes, exactly. It's a thing in progress, and
yeah, there needs to be progress, I think, is the point.
Progress is happening. We'll see how we go. We might move back to the old one. Maybe we'll see how it goes. Maybe I'll listen back to it and see, like, what the difference is in editing. Maybe it's better or maybe it's worse.
I mean, I think we should check that now before we record the whole episode, but
nah,
I mean, we're fatalists.
We're stuck in now. I mean, if we could do that episode when you'd had a few drinks, I think we can stick with an episode with an echo.
I've never podcasted drunk. I don't know. I'm a professional podcaster. I'm an influencer. I've never done this drunk.
You are under the influence.
Hey.
So, X-Men, specifically Days of Future Past, a classic, kind of retro, but ultimately, apparently, one of the best X-Men stories ever done.
Well, because we said we were going to do some X-Men this week for a reason that I can't remember. I just go with the flow.
You want me to tell you?
Nah, fuck it. Right, like, we're here now. I've done it. I've read it.
I will get into it later, but
and
go
I
on.
Couldn't remember if you told me we were reading the best X-Men comic ever or the worst. And from the comic, I couldn't tell.
So, that's interesting. It's an interesting way to look at it. I am fascinated to hear your thoughts on it because it's very of its time, X-Men. I mean, this is prime 80s. I think this came out in 81.
Right,
this
okay. Comic.
So it's very of its time. It's also a very pivotal time in the time of the X-Men as characters. We're doing Days of Future Past because X-Men 97, the animated show, is coming out on Disney Plus. So that is a continuation of the 97 animated series, which for our generation was like prime superhero fodder, home from school and there's an episode playing kind of thing.
It was pretty good as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it really, like, it went a long way into, like, maintaining the elevated status of the X-Men as superheroes in modern media. I mean, at that, because of that and because of, like, the Spider-Man animated series, X-Men and Spider-Man were the first films of the Marvel kind of slate in, like, the noughties.
Yeah,
because before them you really only had Batman and Superman and like a weird Supergirl and, like, you know, other little bits, but they were, like, the first commercially successful of
there
the
were
Marvel
bits
properties
and bobs, but of our generation they were the first, like the Sam Raimi Spider-Man films and the X-Men films were...
Yeah, and it makes sense, as I said, those animated shows influenced that generation, and then, like, 10 years later, they were like, people really love these characters, so guess we're making films out of them. But, yeah, and Days of Future Past is a bit of a unique one as well, because it's a very well-known story, but as you can tell reading the comic, it was just two issues an entire a run spanning decades. Two issues were this story, and it just got really a lot of attention.
Kind of backcrap crazy as well.
It's a crazy one, yeah. But the X-Men were crazy at that time. Like,
right,
Yeah.
Okay.
So we read some of the trade paperback, and I read it first, and then I warned you. I was like, do not read all of this, because it's not just the two issues. It's about five issues beforehand. And for some reason, the first issue was an entire recap of the X-Men, like, from the 60s till now. I was surprised. I was reading it and I was like, so it starts off with the funeral of Jean Grey post the Phoenix Saga. So if you know X-Men, you know Phoenix Saga, big story there. It started with that, and Scott is at the funeral and he's reminiscing about, like, oh, I remember when we first joined the team and I first met her and that kind of thing. And I'm like, this makes sense. He was like, and then over the next 10, 15 years, all these events happened in order. It's like, why are you recapping all of this? And I think because the Phoenix Saga just ended and it was so successful, it felt like at this time they were like, maybe new readers are going to start. So let's just take this opportunity to, let's take an issue and just tell everyone what's happened for the past 15 years.
Yeah, absolutely. There's people who just won't know what's going on.
Exactly. But the problem with those the comics at that time is, every issue is like that.
Every issue
is like, this is Wolverine. He has claws that come out of his hands. Like, the exposition is up the ass.
And even though we're halfway through a trade paperback, that happens when he's introduced.
Yes, exactly. So it's a very weird one. But what's interesting as well is, I didn't know like the details of this. I knew bits of it. But this is the writing of a comic creator or writer by the name of Chris Claremont. Mm. So Chris Claremont is synonymous with the X-Men
right.
franchise because he came in 1975. Mm. So X-Men had already been going since the 60s. I don't know exactly when, but basically at that point, they were not a good, like they weren't a successful IP for Marvel, to the point where apparently, as I read into it, X-Men characters were just appearing in every other comic. Like, oh, look, here's Cyclops from the X-Men. Buy his comic. Like, that kind of thing.
And wow, yeah, they were struggling that hard.
Exactly. So then this guy, Chris Claremont, took over in 75, wrote for, like, decades, like, at least 10 plus years on X-Men, and he defined what we know it as today.
Right.
So prime example, in this era, they introduced what they called the new X-Men, which was characters like Storm, Wolverine, Nightcrawler, Colossus, and a bunch of others. And so that shaped what would then be the animated series, which came out like 10 years later, which then influenced every X-Men thing that came out afterwards. So it's all down to this one guy.
So obviously, since the X-Men films, I think most people's only real interaction with the X-Men, particularly if you're just like a casual MCU follower, would be Colossus turning up in Deadpool. And that was my first time with Colossus because he wasn't huge in the X-Men of the 90s.
He was in them to the level where if you knew him, you'd be like, oh, there's Colossus. But you weren't like, hey, everyone, here's Colossus.
But it's a joke in the Deadpool films that he's the only one that could get the IP for.
Yes.
And so it was really fun to see him playing quite a central role here.
Yeah. And he's more prominent in this era because they were trying to get over all the new characters. Mm. Obviously, they didn't anticipate Wolverine being like the most
amazing
character.
So we've talked, I don't know if you and I talked about this on air or if it's a conversation that we just had, but Wolverine wasn't initially an X-Men character, was he? So he's a relatively new character at this point in the early 1980s.
Yes. He first appeared, I think, in Incredible Hulk, and he was not a mutant. I don't know if this was his origin in issue, his first appearance, or if it was going to be the origin and it was scrapped, but at one point he was going to be a mutated Wolverine, like a Wolverine who mutated into a person, which is great. But yeah, he was just kind of, he was a Canadian mercenary kind of thing, maybe not even a mercenary, but yeah, he was just a random character, appeared to the Hulk, an antagonist in the Hulk, and then they were like, oh, you remember that Wolverine guy? Turns out he's a mutant, and now he's in the X-Men. So it's been a weird journey for him, especially going from that to most famous X-Men character.
Well, did that happen during the 97 cartoon, though? Did he just happen to be there and that's when he became super popular? Or did it happen in this era that we're reading?
I think the cartoon went a long way. So he wasn't the main guy, but he was prominent. So the reason I know that is I rewatched some of the animated show.
Is it good? Does it hold up?
The first series holds up, but it's very janky in a lot of ways, but that adds to its charm. Like, it's nostalgic, especially for how bad it is in areas, but it still holds up as just like an entertaining watch. And the main thing I know is thinking about Wolverine when I was watching is in the opening credits, it shows you all the characters, which for the time, like, I think that was a great thing. Like, hey, here's like an ensemble cast of 10 characters for a kids' TV show, and they're all as important as each other kind of thing. But in that, he's the second character mentioned, with the first being Cyclops. So he was prominent, but he wasn't as prominent as like 2 decades later when they did a cartoon called Wolverine and the X-Men.
Yes.
Which is like when a band like was a musical example of like so and so and the rest of them. Do you know what I mean?
Buddy Holly and the Crickets.
There you go. Yeah, that'll do. So back to the comic, and as I said, Days of Future Past. What's interesting about it
is Paul McCartney featuring Wings.
Yeah, exactly. He was never in Wings. He was like the lead of Wings, wasn't he?
Yeah, totally. It was Paul McCartney and Wings. Yeah. Like,
so what's interesting about Days of Future Past, as I said earlier, it's just two issues in a story, but it just resonated so much with people. And then in the animated series, they did just 2 episodes covering that. But those 2 episodes of the animated series, people remembered for like decades after. Like, you remember that Days of Future Past storyline in the animated show? To the point where it's now become a full X-Men film. So, like, even like they tried to do the Phoenix Saga in an X-Men film, and it was so much in the comic, like that spanned like years.
Isn't that the one with Sophie Turner?
One of them, yeah. X-Men 3 was the other one.
Yeah.
But they tried to do that and just failed because it was just trying to condense too much, you know, into a film, and it was just for not much the result. But then the Days of Future Past, because it's just two issues and two episodes of a cartoon, it was like, oh yeah, we can build on this and we can actually like expand it and make it even better, which
Have
I feel
I
they
seen
did.
Days of Future Past?
I don't know, maybe. I mean...
it would be awful if I came into this having not seen it.
Yeah, but you don't need to see the film. Like, but what helps remember is it's the one with Stewart, McAvoy, Fassbender, and...
in which case I've definitely seen
who was the wizard in Lord of the Rings. Gandalf. Who was Gandalf?
Michael Gambon?
No. You're thinking of Dumbledore. Bloody hell. Friends with Stewart.
Patrick Stewart. No, I know what you mean.
Ian McKellen. So it's the only film with all four of them playing both the two characters, Xavier and Magneto.
In which case I've not seen it.
Okay, fair enough.
I've seen Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen.
Yeah.
And I've seen James McAvoy and Fassbender.
Separately, yeah.
Yeah, but never together. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, Days of Future Past. It was a great film. I highly recommend it if you haven't seen an X-Men film. You don't need that much to...
I feel like we should pause this episode and I should just go watch it.
But you've read the comic and that's what we're here for, you know?
Well, I mean, technically, but is it?
And speaking of being here for the comic, like I said earlier, written by... before I go into that... okay, let's go.
You're not making that a thing. Make it a thing.
I'm shoehorning it into the podcast.
Every week.
Even if I ruin the bit, I'm going to like force it.
I did it once and it was a good time.
I
you
just
can't
like saying
engineer
it.
Magic.
I feel like we engineer magic on a weekly basis, if I'm being honest, if I'm being real with you. But the writer, Chris Claremont, with artist John Byrne. And what's interesting is back in this issue, they credit them as writer and artist, but they also in the middle of their names put co-plotters. So this is something we've been bringing up about writer and artist who's like laying out the panels and everything, and this one is like they both did it. But it's weird that they're addressing it here and they stopped, or maybe this is the only one they did, but I just thought that was noteworthy. So as I said, two issues from Uncanny X-Men. I was surprised to learn that this, so I need to get across to you which issues were Days of Future Past.
Yeah.
So you read the right ones. And what I thought was interesting was the numbered of, I thought, oh, Uncanny X-Men is going on for like 140 issues by this point.
Yeah.
And it's a yes or no thing. Because on the one hand, X-Men comics had been running for that many issues, but they kept changing the name. So back, like nowadays, they'll just reboot a number one. Go, look, it's Daredevil number one again, like with restart. When it's the same writer, same artist, nothing's changed. We've gone, it's number one again. Back then, what they did was they kept the numbers going because they liked the big numbers. They're like, you're reading the 140th issue of this series, which has been running since the 60s, which this had. This was X-Men first started in this comic. But the name kept changing. So Uncanny X-Men only started from like 120 or something.
Right.
And so it
Because I
changing.
Thought it was a really weird, because they used to have like the Amazing Spider-Man and stuff like that. They liked these little monikers, didn't they?
Yeah. And if they fit, then they'll keep them forever. Whereas if they don't stick, they'll obviously retry other stuff.
Because they keep using the Amazing Spider-Man or the Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah,
they've
it's
been
synonymous.
Using. But the Uncanny X-Men, doesn't roll off the tongue very well. Not like the Amazing Spider-Man.
No, exactly. I feel like it's one of those ones, I think Extraordinary X-Men has been one.
Which I like.
Yeah. There's one that's been going now, which is, Immortal X-Men? I'm thinking of bloody Al Ewing's specific run.
You're thinking about Hulk and Thor, aren't you?
Yeah. There's ones that's been going on. I might be reading it right now. Let me just see if I can bring it up. No, it's just called X-Men, so probably not. But to be fair to this era as well, the success of this era was when they spawned off loads of different little spin-offs of X-Men.
Yeah.
So like notable one being X-Force, which is like the SWAT team version of X-Men, which Wolverine's normally on. So obviously it was popular for that reason. And it was good writing as well. But yeah, so Prime X-Men, the launch pad of like the proper franchise as a whole. And starting with the arting, what did you think of it? Or do you want to do an overhaul of the entire comic first? What are your general thoughts on Days of Future Past?
So, it's a hot mess.
I can see where you're coming from.
It's a bit of a hot mess, but I liked the concept.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, it's a concept that, again, regular listeners of the Comic Literate Podcast will be aware that at this particular moment in my life, I'm quite technophobic. I'm quite concerned about the progression of AI and the ever-changing economic landscape that that's going to create.
What a time to be reading this comic.
Right, yeah. And so seeing a comic book that is set in the 80s with 2013 as the dystopian future.
The far-off times of 2013. It's like, what is it, Back to the Future. And like, we've got to go to, what was it, 2001 or whatever.
It was 2019, wasn't it?
That's the one.
So seeing that, and then we've got these kind of the Sentinels, these essentially artificial intelligences.
Essentially, yeah.
That took the brief too far.
Yeah, ran with it.
Yeah, exactly. It really taps into a certain neuroses that I currently have. And so on that level, I found it quite compelling. But also, in general, the story is the hot mess.
Yes.
I think is my perception of it. I liked, again, I like old things. And like one of my favourite episodes we've ever made, particularly just to do the reading for and to think about, was the first appearance of Batman, most recent Batman, first appearance of Superman, blah, 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 that we did.
Yep.
We did that a while ago. If you've not heard it, go listen to it. It's a great episode. I like reading older comics. I liked reading For the Man Who Has Everything. I liked
Superman's dad's a Nazi.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so on that level, I quite enjoyed it. I quite enjoyed seeing an early representation of Wolverine's dialect. I liked seeing the X-Men as they were in the 80s during this kind of first reboot of them. It was, you know, it was a fun time on that level. Purely enjoyed as a story, it's a bit of a hot mess.
Yeah.
Which I think I've said four times now.
I think I like the, as you say, I like the core concept of the story, but I'm coming from a very biased viewpoint because it's one I've seen in other iterations already.
So you've watched the 97 cartoon and the film. Like, this is a very familiar, quite well-trodden story for you at this point.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm viewing it from a way of like, ooh, it's interesting how this aspect is different and that kind of stuff.
Whereas I was very, I mean, I did watch some of the 97 cartoon.
Really?
As a kid, yeah.
Oh, of course, right.
And so I might have been exposed to this story. I just don't, it clearly didn't imprint on me that much.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's, I mean, if you're a comic book fan, which I imagine if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are. And you know, you've read any amount of X-Men and you've not read this one, I would recommend you go and, you know, grab a copy online, digitally or whatever, and give it a read.
Yeah, I would say I enjoyed it, but I enjoyed it from a very kind of like, I've said this before about old stuff, like regard any kind of medium, old stuff where people say, oh, you've got to read this. It's the best thing of all time, like, or you know, like Citizen Kane or 12 Angry Men as like film examples. My thing is, you can never go back and experience it as it was at the time, or and you lose that the further away you get from it.
Citizen Kane is a fantastic film though.
Yeah, but what I'm getting at is you're never going to enjoy it the same way people did when it released. And that feeling loses more and more of it as you get on. To that, there's a certain point where you read or you watch old stuff, and it just becomes you're viewing at something from like a, almost like an anthropological viewpoint. You're like, oh, this is how it was back then, and look, and you can still be like, this is a really good version of the stuff from that time, but you're never going to enjoy it in the same way. And this, I get a bit of it with this because 80s comics, I mean, exposition, like,
oh my god,
dumps on every panel.
Yeah.
And that just was the way it was at the time. Like, I don't think there was as much of a standard for, like, I don't want to say good writing, but specifically good dialogue writing in comics.
No, I mean, it was just different. It was just different. It was a more staid time, wasn't it?
I think at this point, like these days, if you're reading a comic, you're normally like reading a run. Whereas back then, people would just pick up random issues of stuff as and when they released. And so I think they were anticipating every issue being for new readers.
It also wasn't proofread very well.
Well, that as well, yes.
Which took me out of it. Did you notice the screamer?
The what?
The screamer.
Screamer?
Yeah.
No.
The grammatical error.
Oh god, no. Obviously not.
There was a pretty loud one.
Okay. What was it?
So it's when Kate is heading back to the the unit that they're being interred in.
Yeah.
And it says, after an exhaustive and intentionally humiliating security examination to ensure that she carrying no contraband.
Okay, yeah.
Should be she is or was. Kate is allowed to re-enter the camp that has been her home since the turn of the century. But there's a grammatical error in there.
So
I have never experienced that in a modern comic.
No.
I have never read a modern comic and been like, fuck, I've just noticed a huge grammatical error.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, these things happen and it's not the end of the world. And, you know, it shouldn't be a central focus for my interpretation of the story. But if I find a big grammatical error in something, it does turn me off a little bit.
You specifically.
It belies a certain lack of polish.
Yep.
And I think there is an inherent carelessness.
Yeah.
We don't like grammatical errors. They're ugly.
I think there's definitely an element of, and this is speculation, as you say, this could have just been a one-off mistake, you know, that just slipped through the cracks. But it's also possible that at this time, these comics were aimed at children primarily, and the reason that comics nowadays are more for adults and kids is because kids back then kept reading comics or came back to comics.
I would argue, though, if you are creating content for children, you have a greater responsibility to make sure that it's grammatically correct.
So the other point I was going to make was, because of the kind of low cost of print or whatever per comic, I don't know what the money was in this, but I feel like the comics have always been so close to the wire where they're just like getting people working on it and just churning out issues as much as possible and trying to make as much of a profit and that kind of thing. It wouldn't surprise me if they just, again, weren't focusing as highly on ad screening and, like you say, I mean, they should have been.
I mean, this is the neon-coloured cocaine 80s in America, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
And so everybody was off their fucking tits.
I mean, interestingly enough, it was the 90s that was like the cocaine-fueled, like, everyone off their tits in the comics world.
Really?
The 80s was like, oh, things are going well. Like, the biggest stories are happening. Like, stories that happened in the 80s were remembered for years after. Like, 70s, you just came off, like, the kind of golden age, so... Yeah. Things were hot there. Writers were finding their grooves and like finding the characters that worked for them and stuff. So it was interesting that, as I said, the 80s was like a prime kind of time for building all these characters that we know now. And then the 90s, they were like, oh, sales are starting to dip. Quick, make everyone gritty and dark. And the Dark Knight Returns has just come back and just hasn't done well. So everyone's going to be a goth, or, you know, Spider-Man's going to get a black suit or whatever.
Because The Killing Joke is from the 80s, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it's from this similar year. It was in the 80s. And the reason I know it's from the 80s, it was such a weird thing. Someone noticed this on Reddit. They were like, oh, it's weird that these comics from the same year. So what it was someone thought it was weird that Batman went through the story of The Killing Joke at the same time as the story of Death in the Family. Death in the Family being when Jason Todd got killed. And someone pointed out, and they just kind of a weird quirk, like, oh, it's weird that Batman went through these things in the same year. And I was like, well, The Killing Joke wasn't meant to be canon, so that's kind of why.
Yeah.
But then when I thought about it, I was like, wait, I've read both those comics. I had no idea they were from the same decade, because they look intensely different.
Yeah, totally.
Death in the Family is the one I refer to a lot, when I was like, they're riding through the desert, and Batman goes, it's a good thing we're riding at night when it's cool. I was like, wait, it's nighttime.
Yeah,
the sky is bright blue. Like, what's happening? So it's weird to think that happening. But then in The Killing Joke, quite detailed, like quite realistic, and compared to Death in the Family.
I think we've purposefully avoided The Killing Joke, haven't we?
Yes.
And when we talked about making a comic book podcast, I was like, oh, we need to talk about Killing Joke. And you were like, yeah, maybe one day. And we've kind of just avoided it because it's such well-trodden ground. But it does still look good.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those ones that just gets talked about to death. In the same vein of, like, Watchmen, Dark Knight Rises, the other most talked about ones. Anything Alan Moore, obviously.
Yeah, The Watchmen.
Yeah, exactly. So it's one of those ones I was like, when we first started, so I was like, let's try and do some other stuff and, like...
Which is why we ended up talking about, like, Mouse and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly.
But talking about the way The Killing Joke looks does give me a very nice little segue into talking about the arting.
And it's kind of still starting with the arting.
Well, you know, we can talk about it. I mean, I don't think there's a lot to talk about here.
No, I haven't got many notes on it, to be fair. My biggest note, and this is of its time 80s comics, especially Marvel, probably DC as well, the sometimes detailed background, which I liked the
and
look of.
Sometimes like, completely plain background.
Sometimes just literally one color back.
And yeah, compositionally, there's not a lot of consistency, is there? I mean, I like this style. This very highly saturated, very, very colorful.
Kind of camp, but also kind of like exciting and bright as well.
This is very much the style they were cribbing off for the 97 cartoon, isn't it?
The costumes are almost like for like from this era.
Yeah. Well, no, because Wolverine has the white and black in...
yellow and black.
Yellow and black, sorry.
And this is a bit more brown. But yeah, and I think the yellow one, I think, I don't know if that changed in the comics or whether it was like when they came to the anime show, I was like, let's give him more of like a brighter color.
Let's just make him pop, yeah.
Because that's one thing about the anime show is you look at the characters and they're all so distinguished from each other.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we'll never really see that the way we were meant to again because we're not watching it on a CRT.
No, but I mean, if you go on Disney...
They have the truest blacks, Ryan. Yes. They have the truest blacks.
You still get the 4-3 ratio on Disney, which is really? just necessary, isn't it?
So
it looked
good.
Stretched out if it didn't, I
Well,
guess.
Yeah. Do you know when they first put Friends on Netflix, they got the ratio wrong and they stretched it out so much that you could see... Or it was like a detail thing, but you could see stuff off frame that you weren't supposed to see, and you could also see when they were using doubles.
See, that seems wild to me because, like, I just always imagined that what went in the camera was it. Like, it's weird to think that there was clipped off footage that made it in if they changed the ratio.
Yeah, something happened. I can't remember. It was a thing. This is a very well-researched episode, Ryan. The commenters are going to love this bit.
I mean, some of them. Most of them don't care.
The commenters love it when I do really detailed research. I don't know if you know this.
They like it when we pretend to have research when we haven't.
But no, art style.
Yes.
I mean, it's an 80s comic book, isn't
it? Yes.
Although, I mean, when we talked about the Turtles and we saw the original comic book and it was all black and grey, I like that this is in colour.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's very 80s colour. Like,
yeah, like the colour work is very 80s. Mm. It reminds me more of John Romita Sr. Spider-Man with the kind of high contrast thing. Mm. And you know, I mean, it looks good.
I think Romita Sr. had created essentially the Marvel House style by this point now. So I think we are seeing the results of Romita's success.
Yeah, potentially. Mm.
Interestingly, do you want to know who becomes the artist on X-Men in about 4 years after this comic?
Romita Jr.
Yep, Romita Jr.
How old is John Romita Jr.?
He's pretty old. He's getting there. I mean, I had a look at some of the stuff. So it's from 85 that I saw because there was a character came in that I was like, oh, I wonder what that looked like. It looks all right. Like, it doesn't look as bad as the Spider-Man one that we looked at later. So it's interesting. I think he's got more of the style suits that time. Like mid-80s X-Men, it definitely suited that more. I think.
I'm ready to give him another try.
Yes,
I am ready to give him another shot.
We'd see him more in like with stuff that he is more suited for, if that makes sense. Apparently, he was really good in Daredevil in the 90s.
Really?
So, yeah, maybe that's one we'll have to do at some point. I do like that when we get to
isn't that a particular favorite of yours?
Daredevil character and comic, yeah. Not necessarily his stuff. Like my favorite Daredevil stuff is probably written by Chip Zdarsky.
Right, okay, that makes sense.
More, which is like the most recent stuff. Yeah. Also, the Frank Miller stuff is awesome. There's a great comic as an issue where you know the character Bullseye.
He
is in a hospital bed, like absolutely fucked up from, and he just killed Elektra, which is like a big moment in all comics, let alone Daredevil. And Daredevil is standing over his hospital bed with a revolver with one bullet in it.
Right.
And he's playing Russian roulette with him and Bullseye. And what's great about it as well is the background is all white.
Mm.
And that's not normally the case in Daredevil. But it makes it so good because it feels like this ethereal, like not happening in limbo kind of air. And it is in a way because it's Daredevil considering killing a man after him killing the love of his life. It's a great issue. I just happened to read it. I don't even know why. I think someone linked to it. It was like, hey, check this out. And I looked at the art. I was like, I need to read this comic. But yeah, well worth a read. Maybe we'll cover that one day. In terms of when we get to the Days of Future Past part with the future and the present. Present being 81.
And the future being 2013.
I did like the color grading of the different times. Made it extremely easy to know which was when.
And I like the idea that New York, I mean, again, it just always amuses me to know, to see like projections of the future from the past.
Yes.
Particularly when it's a future that is now the past.
Yeah. And it helps as well that this is such a dystopian future that there's no kind of like, oh, they thought it was going to be like this in 2013. Like it's a dystopian hellhole. So there's none of that. So it doesn't take you out of it by being like, we're all going to have hover cars by 2013.
No, it's like New York is going to be in rubble.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, you know, not that far off. But
oh no.
But I like that comparison, you know, using the colors. It's an old trope, but it's effective.
Yeah, it works, doesn't it?
And the dark shade, the dark shading, I just like the darker shading, the future stuff as well. I think there was a bit more detailed. Like, I personally might have even preferred the whole thing to be in that style, taking out the time jump thing. But I really liked how the future was kind of drawn and shown and stuff. Whereas yeah. in the modern day, it's good for just when characters are talking. When it got into like the fights, I felt like some of the fights in the modern day were a bit harder to be like, hang on, who's doing what?
Yes.
It might have been because there was more powers in the modern day and they had to kind of account for that.
Yeah.
I think that is something they were still struggling with at this point, like how to represent like these characters' different powers and how they're doing. I think if you're writing the one character, like Spider-Man, or drawing, I should say, the one character, you get to know web swinging and wall crawling because you're doing them every issue. You're doing the one set of powers every issue. This one's like, okay, how does Storm's powers look?
I mean, yeah, it's a lot. I mean, again, this is an ensemble cast, isn't it? Which yeah. makes it more challenging for everybody, I think.
Definitely a bit ambitious for the time.
I like the fact that the Sentinels look the way that I remember Magneto to look.
Yeah, I don't know why that is. I don't know if that was just a coincidence or not. Because I don't think they're meant to look alike. They do, obviously. Like, Magneto's helmet and the Sentinel heads look quite similar.
Mm.
And then because both characters are, they're kept all together. So, like, Magneto's armor or whatever he's wearing then looks similar to the bodies of the Sentinels. But yeah, I don't think that's meant to be intentional. I don't think. But I've always thought of them as connected as well from being a kid, but for exactly that same reason.
Mm.
But yeah, the art, that's pretty much all I have to say on it.
There's not a lot to say on it, really.
No, it's without going into like deeper comparisons of like, here's how the 80s comics look compared to now kind of thing. It's weird, I suppose, comparing this to like DC at the time, because the only one we know from that time really is the Alan Moore Superman comic. And that definitely felt a lot bleaker in terms of color. So I can see why things like X-Men were doing really well, because you had all these different characters and all these different bright colors and everything.
Mm.
I can see why you'd look at like a comic book stand or like the newspaper stand or whatever. You'd see all these characters on the cover and you go, wow, look at all this.
And the cover art here is banging.
Exactly.
cover art is banging.
Compared to potentially what DC was like at the time, which I think was just maybe a bit more muted, you know, just less colorful overall. But yeah, that's finishing with the arting, I think.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's all of those things that I think when we're dealing with more modern stuff, there's an impetus to sort of dig into it a bit more.
Well, we are in the weeds of the modern stuff more. So I think we can draw for more kind of comparisons and stuff. I think, again, this was the Romita Sr. established house style, so there wasn't as much deviation from it.
Yeah, totally.
But, well, like you said, for other comics, like you could tell which character's which. They're all dispensed quite... You know.
Oh, I mean, yeah, this is the thing, man. They did a great job in an ensemble cast of making everyone very distinct. Because, again, I've talked about this before, the key to a good character in illustration or animation is silhouette.
Yeah.
And every single one of the X-Men, and to a certain degree, the League of Evil Mutants.
The Brotherhood of Evil Mutants.
The Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, led by a woman. Mad.
Which, every time I read that now, all I think is, are we the baddies? It's so bad.
It's so bad. But even down to them, they all have pretty unique silhouettes.
Yes. Blob, like, especially.
Blob, I'm thinking Blob. I'm thinking Colossus. I'm thinking Wolverine with his sideburns and his hair.
A lot of references to him being short, which I think would be odd for modern viewers.
Right, because it's a little known fact that Wolverine is short and Canadian.
Yes. And Hugh Jackman, despite not being Canadian, because that doesn't matter, but also was not short. So I think
he's a relatively tall chap.
Yeah. I'm really hoping they go short for the next casting.
Are they recasting him?
Yeah, they've got to, because Hugh Jackman's not doing it anymore, and they need someone to like do the next 10 years of MCU X-Men.
But isn't he going to be in the Deadpool film?
Yeah, but he already said before this one that he wasn't going to play Wolverine again, and then Ryan Reynolds was like, come on, be in Deadpool 3. And they're really good friends. So Hugh Jackman was like, fine, I'll be in that one.
Because I suppose they were in that X-Men film together all those years ago, weren't they?
Yeah, I don't know if that's where they became friends, but there's the main reason I know they're friends is there was that meme going around a while ago. It was from Christmas, and apparently it was Hugh Jackman, Ryan Reynolds, and Jake Gyllenhaal, and they were at a Christmas thing. They were having some Christmas party, and apparently Jake and Gyllenhaal, Hugh Jackman told Ryan Reynolds that it was an ugly Christmas sweater party, and it wasn't. So there's a picture of Hugh and Jake either side of Ryan. Ryan's wearing it's like a Christmas present like with the ribbon and stuff on the front. But he's standing there and Hugh and Jake are just laughing at him from the sides. Proper, like, they're not like faking it for the camera. They're like Jake's like trying to hold his stomach. And Ryan's just standing in the middle of them with the most like, I fucking hate this face. If you know, we'll take a few seconds just so James can look up and look.
Yeah, I'm looking it up. Oh, that's great. That's fantastic.
So I knew from then that they were good friends.
Yeah, because you'd have to be, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I feel like Ryan Reynolds strikes me as quite a magnetic person. Oh, so I feel like most people who've met and worked with him are probably like, that guy's pretty fun.
What's interesting is there's a lot of like audience members and fans who really hate his like constant quipping kind of style, which I can understand. I'm a fan and I understand why you wouldn't be a fan of that kind of thing.
I like him.
Yeah, I like him. Like, I mean, he saved the Deadpool. I say saved. He started essentially the Deadpool film series.
Yeah, totally.
Like... So I owe him that because Deadpool's my one of my favorite characters.
Hmm.
But
Back to the comic, what
were we talking about before we got into that? Wolverine casting. I hope they cast someone short. Someone who I hope would be good for that would be Daniel Radcliffe, actually. I think he could do it.
You're not the first person who's talked about this.
Yeah, it's a fan casting.
And do you know what? When he buffs up, because he has buffed up.
Yeah.
And he does look good when he buffs up.
Yeah. Just some big mutton chop sideburns.
So I was forced to watch the first hour or so of the Goblet of Fire the other night.
Right.
I say forced to watch. It was on in the background while I was doing other things.
Right.
And I remember looking at it going, other than Emma Watson, they're all pretty bad actors at this point.
Yeah, I think even Radcliffe said that about like 3 and 4, especially like that era.
Yeah, like Rupert Grint is just very charming, but there's a lot of bloody hell, Larry.
just that constantly.
And yeah, it's the bit where everyone's heckling him and he runs through to sparkly vampire dude.
Robert Pattinson.
I should have referenced Batman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Most recent Batman.
Grunge Batman, specifically.
Yeah. Noir Batman.
Nirvana Batman.
Runs through to him and he's like, and then Robert Pattinson's like, I told everyone not to wear the badges because they're like, Harry's whatever. Like, and I'm just watching it going, yeah, I don't know. I don't really know about this. Like, I don't know. Because I didn't watch the films when they were current.
But also he was a child actor. So like most child actors aren't great.
Yeah, he was a teenager at the time, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Because I then saw him as one of my favorite poets.
Allen Ginsberg?
Yes, in Kill Your Darlings.
Yes.
And he was fantastic in that.
Yep, yep. I think the best thing I've seen him in... Best thing I've seen him in was a film called Horns. Have you heard that?
Well, he was the lead in that, wasn't he?
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
But that he was very good in that. The American accent is a bit strained at points, but other than that, he was great in it.
Yeah. He was good in it. I didn't particularly like the film.
There's a one film where he's a Nazi. Apparently, he's very good in that.
Am I supposed to know this?
No, but there was a film where he was a Nazi. He played an undercover Nazi. So he plays like a...
An undercover Nazi?
Yes.
What?
So he played... I haven't seen the film, but I saw the trailer. But basically, he plays a character who infiltrates a like white supremacist group because they're recruiting like ex veterans out of the army.
Yes.
And so, but like the trailer, like to shock you, it's like, do you remember Harry Potter? Well, here's him doing a Nazi salute with a skinhead.
No, I am familiar with that. Yes.
Yeah, apparently he's good in that.
He was also in like Catch Me If You Can 2 or something.
Was there a Catch Me If You Can 2?
It's not Catch Me If You Can.
Now You See Me?
Now You See Me.
Now You See Me is fucking awful. I've seen both of them.
So... I like Jesse Eisenberg.
I like Jesse Eisenberg. He's great.
So they did Now You See Me, and then they did Now You See Me 2 instead of Now You Don't.
No, that's not the... I agree with you, that is a fault. It's not the most egregious part.
No, the films are bad. I agree.
The most egregious part about it to me is, right, if you're doing magic in a film, either it's real magic... Like magical magic.
Well, and like Gandalf magic.
Yeah, exactly. And anything goes.
Wizardy magic.
Or it's illusion and sleight of hand. So for me, if you're doing magic, do whatever. CGI, anything. If you're doing illusion and sleight of hand, it needs to look like illusion and sleight of hand.
Right.
Now You See Me, and subsequently Now You See Me Too, should have been Now You Don't. Just literally just CGI over the top tricks that could never be explained. And it's just like, yeah, they're just really good magicians.
Because
like,
don't they have, what's his name?
They have a lot of people in them.
Yeah, well, and this is the thing, right? Because Jesse Eisenberg and, what's his name? Friends of Willie Nelson.
Woody Harrelson?
Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
Right?
Did you say friends with Woody Nelson?
Willie Nelson.
Okay, right, yeah.
Those two are fire together in Zombieland. Zombieland's an amazing film.
The first one is. Second one's all right.
I like Double Tap.
I thought it was all right. It wasn't as good as the first one, but it was fine.
Again, I really like Jesse Eisenberg and Woody Harrelson. Like, give me more Jesse Eisenberg or Woody Harrelson content. I'm happy.
Yeah.
And so I went into Now You See Me being like, Jesse Eisenberg, Woody Harrelson. It's got, what's his face's little brother in it?
Dave Franco.
Yeah, it's got Dave Franco in it.
Yeah.
Like, he's all right. He's better than his brother.
Oh, in a lot of ways, apparently.
And yeah, it was a letdown. We need to talk about the fucking comic, Ryan. We've not talked about the comic yet.
All right, so...
You're stressing me out.
Okay, so in terms of the story, I think what I really liked about the story is, and we were actually talking about this with Wonder Woman last week, is I like the showing the slow incremental growth of rising like hate and discrimination. And the leading into, like...
I don't feel like I got that here, though. I got some panels and a lot of exposition.
Yeah, I'm looking at the core story. So, like, and it is something you kind of have to look past all the exposition for.
One can choose to look past it if they want to enjoy this despite it.
I think it works in two ways, because like when you're reading it, we agree there's too much expositional dialogue. Like, that is a fact. But I don't know if this is because of my previous viewings and readings or what have you. I enjoyed the core story, and I'm very aware that it's something you had to, again, look past all the exposition to separate what's actually happening versus what is the added internal thought and spoken word exposition.
So ultimately, I think the core concept is fucking rad.
Right.
Like, yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm on board with what you're saying. I really like the core concept of there is this existential threat and they've had to send somebody back in time, and there's a really great reason that becomes apparent for why they pick the particular person they pick.
Yeah.
And so that all makes sense within the context of the story. And then the other thing that's really interesting is that in a world where weird shit happens all the time and people go a bit kooky, she then has to convince the X-Men of the fact that this has actually happened and that she's not just gone mad.
That's actually one point I particularly enjoyed as well.
Yeah, totally. Like, that was a really great plot point.
Normally, like, we've had it before where someone's been like, I don't have time to explain, or something. Like, what was the Flashpoint one, wasn't it? Yeah. It's like, but wait a minute, Iris West, you're married to someone else? Like,
exactly.
I appreciate in this.
This is exactly what I was thinking of.
That Kate Pryde is the older version, is just very quickly like, look, you're not going to believe me. It helps that in this X-Men like world, they have the trope of Professor Xavier. So people are like, no, literally, we don't have time to explain because you can read my mind in a second.
Exactly.
So I don't need to explain. But they did it in a way where Xavier's off somewhere else and they need to go to him. So in the meantime, she's like, look, I know this sounds crazy. Take me to Professor Xavier. He will confirm my story. But essentially, I'm back from the future. I'm back in the present and I need to stop.
Something. I've just met you and this is crazy, but my name's Kate and you need to believe me.
You almost had it. Almost.
It was so close.
It was like 9 out of 10.
Can I come back to it at the end?
Work on it in the meantime.
Well, yeah, once I've had some time to ruminate.
In the background.
But no, so the core concept of the story is really interesting.
Yeah.
And the execution, for the most part, is all right. Like, there's a lot that's quite fun to explore here.
I think with this is trying to imagine what it would be like without all the over-expositional dialogue.
I mean, we could commission that.
I think that'd be interesting, like a retelling of an old story, like in a modern way. Like, I think that there's something to that.
Isn't that superhero bread and butter, though?
Well, in a sense.
That's kind of what the superhero industry is, really.
But they're not doing like direct remakes, if that makes sense. So they revisit, you know, ideas and concepts. Like, they did this several times. Like, the Days of Future Past dystopian future became its own reality, or its own, what's it, alternate dimension. You know what I mean?
Oh, did it?
Yeah, because it was popular and successful. So they were like, let's keep coming back to it. So, like, prime example, there's a character called Bishop, who is established X-Men character.
Bishop.
That's X-Men, classic mutant name. It's weird that you find that one so funny.
Such a banal and overly religious thing.
I mean, or chess piece, essentially.
Oh, I suppose. Is he Chessy?
No, it's a random
why
name.
Why is he called Bishop?
Because he was a...
Does he only move diagonally? Is that his power?
He's a superhero character from the 80s. They ran out of names and they were like, just give him anything.
But they had some great ones. Gambit.
Yeah, but like Domino is... I mean, Domino's luck-based, so I guess it's some close to that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So this is what I mean. They'd done the good ones already. So then they had to do these ones.
What was Bishop's power?
He literally like absorbs energy and can shoot it back out again or something. Like it's a boring power, if I'm being perfectly honest.
But yeah.
The only reason I'm bringing him up is he is from the Days of Future Past future.
Right, cool.
So, and then he comes back in time and his whole thing, he's a man out of time. Now he's in the present, but he's always like, oh, you know, mutant registration, all that. Like, oh, it's a slippery slope. I'm from there and it sucks. Mm. One interesting thing about him is he's got an M tattooed over his eye. And that's because where he's from, the mutants were tattooed with that to show everyone. But so he comes back because the Days of Future Past, they kept revisiting it. They're like, oh, and here's a character from it. And here's an enemy we've created from it as well. And like they keep coming back because we keep revisiting the well. But what I'm saying is they don't do like direct remakes. Mm. So they'll be like, here's the Days of Future Past story retold in the modern day. But the problem is they keep the canon going. So like the modern X-Men now, who are 40 years removed from when this first published, they're like, oh yeah, do you remember when Kitty Pryde came back in time and stopped the assassination? Like, they just, that's in their near recent past because they always have to keep the things that were popular in canon. It's why Batman now has like a 10-person bat family. Because as it was happening, it wasn't weird when he would replace the next Robin and, you know, it happened in a slow enough timeline. But then because they're popular and they all retain them, now it's like, I started this war on crime by myself as a loner. Anyway, now it's 15 kids that are part of my crusade. Like, you know,
you
what I mean?
Be in my gang,
Exactly. And they don't remove them because they just keep
they're
adding.
They're so
them.
Popular.
Exactly. And not even if they're popular, just because they don't want to like write them off, you know, out of nowhere again. They don't want to be like, oh yeah, that sucks. So we just forgot about it. So yeah, it's that kind of thing. It's also, I mean, did you read the recap issue?
A bit of it.
So that, reading that, literally, if you'd read it, you would have experienced what I did, which was they get to a point where they start speeding up through things, like, and then this happened, then this happened, then this happened, and it literally turns to this rinse and repeat of, like, and then, like, the first big battle they have is Magneto. Like, he's the first antagonist, first enemy that they have to defeat, and then it turns into a rinse and repeat of, like, and then this person died, so we had to go to the funeral, and then Magneto attacked again, and then another person died, and then Magneto attacked. Like, it literally goes like that, like, gets quicker.
Which is interesting.
It felt to me a little bit like if you took a soap opera or what, like anything like that, when you're watching in real time, events are just happening as they go, and they're at least in like a slow enough like tension building way where they're interesting and fun to watch. But if you take all the events over like 10 years, you go, how much stuff happened on this street? Like, how many people died? How many people came back from the dead?
Well, Ian Beale was homeless for a bit.
How many people...
I've lost everything.
I've got nothing left. That's the one.
There we go. You found it.
But so that's what I mean. Like, when you look back on a condensed history of, like, any comic book character, it's like, how much has actually happened in a year's time? Like, this is insane.
Yeah, totally.
But in terms of the story, like I said, I appreciated like that's the idea of the slowly encroaching like hate and racism, essentially prejudice, like towards this, you know, mutant race.
I just wish it had been handled with a little bit more delicacy, because it doesn't need to be delicate, but I just wish it had played out over more space on the page.
Yeah, I mean, again, like this, I think this was a running theme around this time. Like these characters, so there's a character revealed at the end who you would not have known at all.
Yeah.
But he's a prominent character in this area of the X-Men mythos.
Yeah.
So, but I took from that, this a running story that keeps going. So it's always in the background of this era of X-Men. It's always in the background of like, oh, and there are people turning on us and people fear us and hate us and that kind of thing. And, you know, Charles Xavier being the Martin Luther King stand-in for mutant, like always trying to bring people together. And Magneto, obviously Malcolm X, trying to push him apart. I did appreciate that. Again, there was like this slow build of it. And it was this idea of like a crux point where everything changes because of this specific action. The assassination of a anti-mutant politician would lead to, you know, worse things happening. And I think they handle it with a bit of nuance, because they have like Kitty Pryde saying, oh yeah, this politician, they're like, oh, we hate this guy because he's big anti-mutant politician. And even Kitty Pryde being from the future and having that time to reflect on this kind of stuff and being a bit wiser, she's like, you know what? He has good intentions. Like, he's going about it the worst way, but he's scared. Like, that's where this is all coming from. Because she's experienced the worst stuff to come.
Those words come out of Charles Xavier's mouth.
All right, there's a bit where she does describe him as that. Like,
so Charles Xavier's there in the courthouse listening to him speak.
Yeah.
And somebody says, oh, look at him. And he goes, no, no, he's scared. Stand.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find the bit, because Kitty Pryde says a bit specifically, which I thought was especially interesting coming from her.
Mm.
But, I mean...
because she's not a character I was familiar with.
So she's one that became more popular from here on. And what's especially interesting as well is... she was introduced as a character only several issues before now.
Yeah, well, she's young in this, isn't she?
Exactly.
But I didn't recognize her, but she almost fulfills a similar role as Rogue in my mind.
Rogue as you know her, because in the films she was the young person that was kind of seeing everything for the first time.
Yeah.
And they always have like stand-ins for that character. Mm. It's one of the pluses of the X-Men, is you can constantly introduce a new, like,
you
class.
Can just be like, we need a teenager.
Well, you a bunch of like a class at a time.
Yeah.
Like the first ones were teenagers when they started. That was Cyclops, Jean Grey, Iceman, Angel, and Beast. And then when they got older, you had these new X-Men who were adults to the start as well.
Mm.
But then you had like Kitty Pryde being introduced. And after that, you had like Jubilee, who was like big in the X-Men animated series. So yeah, they always had that as a handy tool to be like, this is all new for this really young person. But it definitely makes sense, like, why they picked her as well. It kind of made her feel more established as a character from so early on. Like, how often does a new character, especially in, like, this bigger comic, a new character who's only introduced a couple of issues ago and is, like, still, was it Babe in the Wood, Babe in the Big City, I suppose, like, kind of, you know, everything's like, wow, look, all this kind of thing. And then suddenly, because of reasons that make sense, she's suddenly like, right, I'm from the future, I know more than you actually now, and I need to, you know, do everything.
I think that's one thing. That is a bit weird.
I mean, I'm surprised there's just one.
So there's a moment where Wolverine says, she looks young, but she seems old. And she smells old.
Yes.
Does he say she smells old? He's like, she smells... I think he says she smells more mature.
I think he says something about like she seems or senses.
No.
I'm going to find that one.
He uses his sense of smell, Ryan. But like, he can smell the miles on a woman. Which is terrifying.
I am going to double check that because
you check away, Sunshine.
And you say something while I find that. Talk about what you thought of like the lineup of X-Men in this part. Like compared to what you know is like the main ones from the films, the animated series. Were there any characters you didn't know who stood out or anything like that?
Well, I was familiar with Colossus from Deadpool, but I thought he was fucking rad. Colossus was cool.
Mm.
Obviously, always really familiar with Storm, but it's always great to see Storm because she's my favorite. Of the X-Men. I really like Storm a lot. Who else was even there? Oh, who was the dude who looked a bit like Mystique?
Oh,
Nightcrawler.
Nightcrawler, yeah.
I wasn't super familiar with Nightcrawler.
So for some reason, Nightcrawler was... He was popular at this time in the comics, but he wasn't...
Was he an OG?
Not an OG, no. But he was second generation.
Right.
So like the same as Wolverine, like same time. He wasn't included in the animated series for some reason.
Mm.
But... about 10 years after that, there was X-Men Evolution, which I was big on. Probably my favorite animated. So that was like these young crop of X-Men, they kind of mixed and matched like these younger generation.
Yeah.
So Nightcrawler became famous in that. Or like more well-known from that.
Cool.
So I found the bit we're referencing. Wolverine says, and you are right. She's thinking, she looks like a kid, but she stands, talks, moves, smells like a woman. So
gross.
I think for all his additional heightened senses, he can smell the difference between an old person and a young person. You're just saying, I think you're associating more to him using the specific word woman, I think.
Weird, dude. It's weird. I'm sorry, it's weird.
So if you could smell the difference between older people and younger people, like you could tell that as a thing.
I would keep my mouth the fuck shut about that one.
So what if you were in a situation where it's like, right, we need to there's a shapeshifter or something. And
we need you to smell the maturity on her, Jamie. I'd be like, no, I'm not going to do that.
No, it's like, we need someone to do it. No one knows you can do it.
So in this hypothetical,
yes,
nobody knows that I can smell the maturity of a woman, right?
People. You're exclusiving it to women. That's making it weird.
Well, yeah, but what is the word that he uses?
Yeah, like woman as opposed to like man, woman, adult. Young person.
Look, I'm reading what's there, man. Like, weird.
I think you're adding to it.
I would... Do you know what, mate? I wouldn't be using that power. I would have a peg
like,
on my...
We need to, like, either this innocent person dies because we can't tell the difference, or we need someone, hypothetically, to tell the difference between this innocent younger person and this shapeshifter who looks like the younger person, but is, we know for a fact through intelligence, is significantly older.
I'd be if like, only... nah, it all smells like human, mate.
That seems dark. Like, you just let an innocent person die just so people don't think you're weird.
You've not read Perfume, have you?
No, but I saw the film. Oh, is that the one where he dies at the end?
It's the one where he kills people based on how they smell.
Yes. Yeah. And then he dies at the end. Doesn't he make everyone have an orgy at the end?
Dude, you were watching a very different film to the book.
That is the film. I guarantee.
Is that the film?
Yeah.
I haven't read the book in 15 years.
So that's what happens at the end of the film.
No, I'm sorry. That one line just struck me as a bit odd. And you've not said anything that's made me any less attached to that notion.
I feel like you're adding more weight to it than is needed.
Well, okay, so how did you read it?
I read it as he has these heightened senses that he uses on everyone, including smell.
Yeah.
And somehow through this time thing that we do not know how it works... they use the word that they sent her soul back in time.
Right.
So we have no idea what that includes or doesn't.
So it's the same body that he was around moments before.
Yes.
So he can smell her soul.
He can smell everyone. He's but Wolverine.
But he can smell her soul.
Apparently,
if the soul is the thing that's moved, he can smell her old soul.
Maybe.
That's some hunter shit.
He's Wolverine. He hunts people.
That's some fucking serial killer shit, dude. I'm sorry.
I mean, the appeal of Wolverine is that he has all the stuff. He could be a serial killer if he was a bad guy. I mean, it adds to the fact that his opposite is Sabretooth, who is essentially a crazy serial killer.
Victor, his brother.
Yes, Victor Creed. Victor. Well, no, not in this. Just in the origins.
Only in the film.
Yes,
you
only
lied
in
to
that
me.
One bad film.
You lied to me, Fox.
Yes. But yeah, so Wolverine has all the capabilities to be a sick, dark serial killer, but we like him because he's not.
And yeah, it stuck with me, Ryan, which is why...
Is any better or worse than Al Pacino being in a film called Scent of a Woman? Because that's far more explicitly...
I've
not seen it either. I just know he was in it. And I know what the film was called and what it generally is about.
What's it generally about?
I think it is about perfume and stuff, but right. I could be like, that's a extremely ignorant telling of it of someone who doesn't seen it.
In fairness, a fairly surface level interpretation of a film called Scent of a Woman is that it would be about perfume.
Yeah. But then the actual film about perfume is called Perfume.
No, that's a film about murdering.
And has an orgy at the end.
Does it?
It does.
I can't believe that.
It's such a specific reference. Fair enough, you wouldn't know it. It's only because you said you read the book, and I was like, oh yeah, you'll get these references.
I read the book a long time ago. I don't remember an orgy.
I only saw the end of the film because it was back when...
Because it was
No,
Ryan, let's be frank here. You watched the end of that film because it had an orgy.
If I had known it had orgy, that might have been the reason to watch it. But what I'm saying is, I just tuned in the end because this was back when my parents had Sky TV and you'd have Sky Movies. So you
God,
just...
were your parents in the room?
No, of course not.
Because that moment is always awful, isn't it? As a teenager.
Yeah, of course.
When you're watching telly with your parents and then a really raunchy sex scene comes on and you're just sat there like...
Your neck stiffens to just tunnel visioning straight ahead.
And you're just trying to you're trying to project with your thoughts that I am unaffected by this.
Yes.
I am unaffected by this, Mum. Mum, I am unaffected by this.
I don't care about this one way or the other.
Yeah, and then you kind of catch your dad's eye and he's just beaming it at you.
That's also why we've had this conversation before, why it's so good that we don't have as many gratuitous sex scenes and stuff now.
Yeah, totally. You can watch TV with your parents now. I mean, not that anybody watches TV anymore, but
especially not with their parents anymore, because therefore everyone's got their own screen and devices.
Yes, exactly.
For any younger listeners, back in the day we used to all sit around this one big TV, so the big TV in your living room, that no one ever uses now.
Yeah,
we all used to sit around that and watch the one same thing with all of us
all evening.
Yeah, it was kind of like when everyone watched Game of Thrones, but we did it for everything
and you didn't get to pick what was on.
No.
There was just a sequence of programming that just happened around you and...
You had to consult the TV guide.
Which was
wasn't a person, it was a magazine.
Which was a magazine that somebody put through your letterbox once a week if you could afford it, wasn't it?
Yes, exactly, yeah.
along with a copy of the EDP.
Yes. For our local area.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting a bit parochial here, yes. But...
I really liked the one of the thugs in the future, that his bad guy nickname was Big Alex.
Yes. I liked that. So, because then they're non-mutants. They call them muties, don't they?
Yeah, humans call them muties, yeah.
Weird.
I mean, it's an attempt at like a derogatory term for mutants.
But they were I didn't really understand them because they were just like hanging around in the rubble of New York.
Yeah, so by that
waiting
point...
Waiting for mutants?
I don't think they were waiting. I think that was just where they were hanging out.
But what were they up to?
I assume they were just outside of like the, what do you call it, like dictatorship of the Sentinels, essentially.
Yeah.
So the problem is, because that is one bit that I think can be misinterpreted or be unclear, why is... this is a dystopian future for anyone who's not a mutant.
Well, it's because the Sentinels overcorrected and decided the best way to get rid of the mutants was just to take over themselves, wasn't it?
Well, take over the world, yes.
Yeah.
But there was also the fact of they were stopping the breeding of any humans who had latent or recessive X gene. So yeah. The mutant gene, essentially. So not only were they just a dictatorship across the entire human race, but the fact they also go into the point of like stopping sections of non-mutant humanity from being able to breed.
I mean, it's eugenicism. Like, it's eugenics.
Yes, exactly, yeah. And so I think that if you were living in that world, that you can see why some humans would be like, you know what, we're going to go to like the destroyed rubble area and live free rather than living under the
We're going to go rut like rabbits and breed.
Yeah, and we're going to dress like fucking the Elvis gang from Fallout 4 or like... Or like a greaser gang from the 50s.
Yeah, we're gonna dress like the Thunderbirds from Greece.
Yeah,
and not the Thunderbirds, the T-Birds.
Yeah, and one guy's like, and I'm gonna call myself Big Alex,
which is fun. But do you not? I because I assumed when I met Big Alex, I knew that Wolverine was on his way.
Yes,
and I was like, this is their way of demonstrating to us that Wolverine is short. And then Wolverine turns up, and Big Alex is like, "Hey, short stuff."
Yeah,
and you're like, "Yes." This is why they've made Big Alex, is just to emasculate Wolverine.
And then Wolverine to fuck him up afterwards.
Yeah, so this is the other thing. The mutants weren't allowed to use their powers.
They had inhibitor collars on.
So the Sentinels put them on them, right?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But the Sentinels were using them to do things.
Yeah, like, for work or whatever.
So they were using them for work, despite... But mostly because they were enhanced, but not allowing them
I
to use any...
I don't think it was because they were enhanced. So this is headcanon. I don't know if he explicitly said this.
And this is the thing, isn't it? That one aspect of it didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. This is the hot messery.
My interpretation was that it was because mutants were expendable. So they were sending them on dangerous missions because, you know, of the humans and the mutants. If you're the Sentinels, you're like, well, obviously we're going to send the mutants.
I suppose there was only four of them left at this point.
Yeah,
like,
they make
it clear that they're like, these are the last four of them.
I did like there was a clever twist with the introduction of Magneto because you first see him in the wheelchair and think it's Professor X.
Yes.
And that was just a nice little like, oh, that's clever.
Well, because I remember looking at it going, oh, in this dystopian future, at least Professor X got to keep his hair.
Yeah. And then, oh, nope, actually
and then
not.
We see him back in 1980, bald as the day he was born.
But also what's interesting about that is we know Magneto as being like almost like an anti-hero at this point. Mm. Like he's joined the X-Men so many times. Yeah. That we always have to be reminded, like, oh yeah, he's the villain of the X-Men.
But at this point in time, he was still very much the villain.
Exactly.
He?
So for a dystopian future, be like, by the way, our biggest enemy, he's with us now. That's how bad things are. That's how dire the situation
but
is.
But then when we meet the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, Mystique is in charge because Magneto is dead, right?
I don't know if dead or just out of the picture at the time.
Right, yeah, because that wasn't really clear to me either.
Yeah, and I don't think, like, I just assume a bunch of stuff. I don't think it mattered to this particular story because, like, they address it in the sense of Magneto used to be the leader, now it's Mystique.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's all they needed to address at that point.
So my experience of Mystique is Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, that's a weird interpretation of the character.
Right, so this is more typical, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. It's closer to, I mean, the first three films, that Mystique was a lot closer to this one.
Oh, yeah, because there's been two actors play Mystique, hasn't there?
Yeah, and I can't remember who the name of the actress who played the first one, but she was a lot closer to, like, working for Magneto and...
I photoshopped Jennifer Lawrence into her role for some reason.
That's interesting.
In my mind,
I can see why, if you're more familiar with one character, you've seen more from the Jennifer Lawrence character, I'm guessing.
Yeah, potentially. I don't really know. All the X-Men films kind of melt into one for me, other than Wolverine Origins.
Yeah, that's a distinct flavor.
Yeah, like, hey, I like that film. We made a whole short about how much I like that film.
There's aspects that
I like the bone claws.
The bone claws are the best part.
Bone claws are great.
There was one comment and there was like, fellow nerds talking about the Wolverine bone claws.
No, it was fellow nerd and bone claw enjoyer.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, I am a bone claw enjoyer, sir.
Should that be the name of fans of the podcast? Bone claw enjoyers. Completely like out of context, completely removed from the short. Just people calling themselves bone claw enjoyers.
Yeah, fuck it. I mean, yeah. We've not found a name for them yet.
Well, we'll wait for someone to write in.
Well, because we both have one.
Yes, we have one that we're keeping secret because we don't want to influence people.
Yeah, but just it's good. It's better than bone claw enjoyers.
Yeah, I mean, this one's a lot more...
I tell you what, should the bone claw... So when we read a comment, when we read a mean comment,
right,
it's from a bone claw enjoyer.
No, but we're bone claw enjoyers. Like...
Oh yeah,
they're saying that he's one of us. I mean, and they are. It's not inaccurate.
Yeah, if you put a mean comment on one of our videos, we consider you part of the family.
Yeah,
because I realize most of those mean comments are coming from my mum. So, yeah, it's mum,
not just yours, but
it's everyone's mum.
So I think, without going into too much in the details of everything else, I think we've covered kind of the bigger parts of this two issue run, to be fair. I like that, again, that it felt like it was an ongoing thing. I'll tell you what, one thing I especially liked, I think you'll agree, when they stop the assassination, spoiler warning, they stop the assassination,
but it'd be a bit shit if they didn't.
Yeah, but when they do, and Kate is immediately kicked out of young Key's body,
yeah,
that was good because it really felt, made the time difference felt real, like this alternate future only exists because, you know, as soon as they change the future, she's immediately kicked out. What I enjoyed especially is they don't then show the future being fine.
Yeah, because old Kay is in a relationship with one of the other
Colossus.
Yeah, right.
But I especially like they didn't pan back and they to the 2013 and go, you saved it and now everything's fine.
It definitely makes Colossus saving her in that room feel a little bit more loaded, doesn't it?
But did he save her or did he just kind of go mental? Because, well, especially when Wolverine got blasted, which was a cool thing as well.
Right.
DC is his bone skeleton.
Yeah.
Yeah. So his metal bone skeleton.
Yeah, his adamantium skeleton.
It looked like a Terminator.
Yeah, kind of. I like the Wolverine we got here. It was a bit heavy on the bub stuff.
Yeah, but he was back then. Like, they were much more trying to get across different character traits and stuff like
that. Yeah, and I suppose his kind of folksy way of talking was part of the appeal, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm watching the animated series now recently. That voice actor, like, such a unique voice for
really?
It. Yeah.
What did he sound like?
I mean, don't you remember?
No, not really.
He's like, let me try, I'll see if I do like an impression, but he's like, hey there, Bob. Like that kind of, I mean, that's not
we're
a
gonna,
good
we're
one.
We're going to live react to it.
Yeah. I mean, I just watched it earlier, so you've had my reaction already.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
It reminds me of the way that Mark Hamill voices the Joker.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah. Like very over the top, like kind of like an old style acting, you know, like what's it called? Like pre Streetcar Named Desire. So like before then, like acting was all kind of like, hello, good sir, I see you are well, like that kind of over the top. But
to go verily.
Yes, exactly. But even like in like normal conversational thing, it was like, I haven't seen you in age. How are you? Good to see you. Like that kind of unrealistic, you know, it was like, it was play, theater.
Theater influence.
But it's that, but with like a gruff guy who's an angry mutant, basically.
Mm.
But you see what I mean? Like it's very over the top. It's also like growling all the way through like every word as well.
Right the way back into his throat.
Yeah.
Like he's palatalizing that in a really weird place in his mouth, isn't he?
Yeah. One note I'll make, which I thought was interesting, I thought you like as well, in the recap issue. They're referencing Bobby Drake, Iceman.
Mm.
And at one point he says, someone like, they're at a party. And so I was like, hey, look, someone brought a girl with them, whatever. And Bobby Drake, Iceman goes, a girl, big deal. Now, that's significant because 40 years later, let's say 30 years later, they retconned Iceman to be a gay character. And I think the reason was obviously they were trying to add more gay characters for representation in the Marvel Universe, and DC did as well. And I think they were just taking characters like, this character's sexuality doesn't matter to the overall character. It's not like Superman or Batman where they have established love interests, and then you'd be retconning a bunch of other stuff as well. So they took a character like Iceman, they went, you know what? He can be gay and it won't change anything, and it'll just, if anything, it'll be add something to his character. So I thought it was interesting where back in the 80s, like, a girl, who cares? Like, it felt a bit like Mac from Always Sunny. He's like, dude, there's too many women here. Like, that kind of thing. But I thought that was an interesting, noteworthy thing.
Yeah, totally. So how did you feel about it overall?
I enjoyed it, but again, I'm coming with a very, not unique perspective, but a far different perspective from yourself, where I'm like, got all this other relevant information about it, and I'm like, ooh, it's cool seeing where this thing I've enjoyed already in other forms, where it started and the differences and that kind of thing. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I had a good time with it. I would recommend it to X-Men fans. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, as an antiquarian, somebody who just likes old things, I enjoyed it. Mm. Like, on that level, I enjoyed it. I found the storytelling really stilted at times.
Yeah.
But I liked what they were driving at.
Yeah.
And so even though I quite pointedly argued for the fact that I'm unwilling to look past the issues with it, I did look past the issues with it and I liked it.
Yeah. Again, it's one of those things, like, this is what I was saying about looking at old stuff. You have to look past like what the tropes of the time were that don't work anymore.
Yeah.
To get through like what was good at the time or what kind of shined through and made things memorable and stick around and be, you know, constantly referenced and remade like decades after it originally happened. So I think we did a good job of getting to the core of it at the very least.
Yeah, totally.
And also the fight was weird with like trying to do everyone's different powers in the big fight at the end, and the backgrounds just disappeared.
Yeah,
I guess it just made it easier
because it was so busy anyway, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I had a great time with it.
Cool. So thank you so very much for listening. We had a lovely time making this one. I hope you had a wonderful time while you were doing whatever you were doing while you listened to it.
Tell you what, you know, I've got a few comments that I actually picked out.
Comments?
So these are comments specifically from the podcast episodes on YouTube.
Cool,
so
yeah, do it.
Picked them out because, I mean, they were on those specific ones, and
because there is a notable bunch of you that listen to us on YouTube, apparently.
Yes.
I never would have thought it, but there are.
Yeah, and also a lot more on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and stuff as well, which has been nice to see grow as well. So one I saw from Major Gillis 408, who said, just found my new favorite binge channel for work. So
amazing.
Cool.
Love that.
Living Dead 4855 said, this is genuinely a really funny and interesting podcast to listen to. I'm really surprised that the views and subs aren't anywhere near as high as they should be. And in a similar vein, HCC, I'm not going to, that might be, this might be a bot account for all I know. just said, why does this have so few views? Top tier nerd talk. And to those last two comments, I'll say the reason that we are not quite reflecting the views that I think we should on YouTube is because the algorithm is not paying us the respect that we deserve.
I think you'll find the algorithm has paid us plenty of respect recently.
But not enough to the level which I'm happy with.
Thank you so much, guys. That's like, I mean, we do this every week and it is sometimes a grind. We have very busy lives. Well, I mean, I certainly do.
Mine's busy for a bit now and then it'll be fine.
And then it'll be fine again. Yeah. So that's just magnificently, that's just so lovely to hear. And it's mind blowing that anybody at all listens to this thing that...
Not just our mums now.
Yeah, I mean, listens to this thing that we're currently making in Ryan's bedroom. Yes. Like, it's just wild.
And we'll see how the echoes are in the edit and maybe we'll be back to the original place.
So thank you so much for listening. If you're listening to this on YouTube, leave a comment, but also we're everywhere that you can get podcasts and you can listen to this on the go. Maybe while you're walking your dog.
Mm. Or mate, doing housework.
Pocket Casts, Apple Music, I think we're even there.
Yep. Wherever you get your podcasts from is what I've heard a lot of people say.
So thank you so much for listening and goodbye.
Thank you, goodbye.